Video games find themselves in the rather precarious position of being both a product for market and a form of art, a position that, although not unique, is nonetheless fairly rare. One could say that the shoes you're wearing are a form of art, and the shoemaker who made them might view his craft as such as well, but most people don't consider their shoes to be works of art. It's a little different with video games. It's hard to miss the simple fact that looking at any game immediately conveys the obvious as you stare at the pixels. This is visual art, unmistakably so. The very first impression you get as a person playing a game are the visuals. It is unavoidable. Environment, character, and level design, even the effects you see in terms of magic and combat, are all part of this art. Add to this the story and writing of any given game, and now it becomes a matter of literary art. It's hard to miss the simple fact that games are art. It's not even remotely disputable. And yet, at the same time, they are equally products meant to be sold to customers, something that is far more easily forgotten than their artistic features, especially these days. Modern gaming has undergone a lot of changes. It's the largest entertainment market in the world now, something that, 30 years ago, had you predicted it, would have been construed as you taking the piss. And more than anything else, the perception of games has changed. Gaming is now just a normal thing to do, not even a hobby, since gaming is non-universal, not a special activity enjoyed by only a few, and perhaps more important than all the rest, especially for the purpose of this video, is the relationship between gamers as customers and developers as artists. And this too has changed, and not all that long ago. Up until comparatively recently, the gamer's purchase was the final stage in a chain of steps in getting games out to market, and one of the most important intermediary stages was the marketing of games via games journalism on well-known websites such as IGN and the recently deceased Game Informer, which had been active for some 33 years before passing away. And the content of these websites was written in the form of articles that were meant to be read. This remained the standard model well into the mid-2010s, as these middlemen conveyed most of the important information to players eager to play the games they were looking forward to. And then, something changed. The rise of, shall we say, civilian-based social media, and more than anything else, YouTube, and the content creators who populated it, as well as streamers on platforms such as Twitch. Increasingly, over the last few years, the popularity of written websites has dwindled, and many of these websites have created their own YouTube channels in an effort to keep up with the current meta, with varying degrees of success, frantically posting to placate the algorithm gods. Increasingly, the reality is that the relationship between developers and gamers, as consumers, has become one-to-one, and this has caused some trouble. Without a middleman who acts as an intermediary agent, and let's be honest, oftentimes is strongly aligned with the interests and vision of the developers, new problems emerge. And this is evident across the board with even the most cursory glance cast at most AAA gaming and its marketing. From Ubisoft to Bethesda to Rocksteady to BioWare, there's a clear disconnect between developers and their customers, and it's one that's generally ignored. Take last year's Starfield release, for example, with so-called games journalists praising it to the high heavens with 9 out of 10s and 10 out of 10s. But something was truly rotten in the Kingdom of Denmark. Written games journalism, with entrenched operatives and vested interests that overlap with those of developers, long made this aspect of gaming invisible. But that time is now over, and this type of journalism, although likely to persist in a liminal sense, is no longer the current order of things. And what's more, very few people take the ratings and claims made by such people seriously. Again, was Starfield really a 10 out of 10? Now, I've made several videos and surveys asking about and talking about voice characters in games, and all this has made it abundantly clear to me that the overwhelming majority of people out there, independent of age, prefer hearing voices to reading, and extrapolating from this, and frankly speaking, simply observing the modern gaming landscape, it's exceedingly clear to me that the written word, although not completely dead, will increasingly lose its value across all media, including journalism. Players want two things above all else: visuals and oral communication to accompany said visuals. And this, as I stated prior, is fairly new, because the writing middleman is no longer a factor. The current market is a direct developer-to-player pipeline, and this changes things greatly. So what exactly is the problem? There are several. Games are art, but they're not just art. And people spend their money to play them. Although nominally aware of this fact, don't act in a manner suggestive of this. When criticism is voiced by ordinary gamers concerning any number of issues, whether art style, combat, or anything else, the response is often to either completely ignore it or to balk at it, because ordinary gamers are allegedly not in a position to appreciate the artistic vision of the developers, i.e., the developers know better than the peons who buy their games. Part of the problem here is the oft-repeated term gaming audience, which really doesn't capture what gamers are as paying customers. The word audience implies static, passive recipients of art that simply sit there and absorb and appreciate whatever artistic scraps are thrown their way, being wholly unable to affect the artistic process. They might like the art or dislike it, but the vision of the artist remains sacred, and most importantly, remains independent of its reception, whether good or bad. This isn't only a poorly chosen word for gamers, it's factually false, as the so-called audience can easily shut down studios should they not approve of the games made, manifested as insufficient sales. And this is where the rubber meets the road. For far too long, many developers have existed in a bubble that smacks of elitism and disrespect towards paying customers, and one that's been enabled by the particulars of the products they sell. If you run a diner and your food is bad, you'll quickly be run out of business. And if you make shoes that fall apart after a week, you won't be making shoes for very long. But the digital medium seems to interact differently in terms of people's psychology, most of which is probably related to its physical distance. After all, you can't physically touch games or ingest them. With most businesses, there's a physical product in question, whether food, manufactured goods, medications, or toys. Games in their modern form circumvent that to a degree, which is why middlemen were able to thrive as written communicators of game information. Would that ever work for shoes, or food, or toys? I think not. And because of the particular circumstances of the moment, the transition from the written word to the purely oral and visual, it doesn't work for games anymore either. And now developers, for better or worse, have to face legions of paying customers, many of whom they actively dislike and look down upon, all the while remaining dependent on their goodwill. Prior to this, developers were shielded from direct criticism because the common folk had no voice and everything was filtered through games journalists who all too coincidentally had especially favorable opinions of the developers and the games they were reviewing. And to be clear, when I say developer, I'm not referring to the random guy who might be responsible for coding, running, or punching, or jumping in a game, but rather the higher-ups, the directors and their ilk, who run the show. How many times these days have you seen disgruntled developers and their allies refer to gamers as whiny or entitled? All too frequently. And once again, this attitude seems to rest on a misapprehension of what the word entitled means. Entitled might describe a petulant child that erupts in displeasure upon not receiving the candy or toy they might impulsively want, but not, and I repeat, not a paying customer. If people are spending money on a product, and spending ever more as the prices of games are going up to meet developer costs, then what you have is not entitlement, but rather customer discretion and preference. And the arrogant developers can hee and ha all about these folk with their quote-unquote entitlement and lack of refinement, but ultimately, they still answer to them, whether they like it or not. There's a clear divide that has emerged between developers, who see themselves as a kind of elite class in the clouds, separate from the rest of us, along with their loyal acolytes among the civilian population who support them unconditionally, and all the ordinary folk out there like you and me whom they view as peons. Moreover, they actively dislike us for anything critical uttered, and even worse, resent us for holding the purse strings to make or break their artistic vision. Do you remember what happened last year in the wake of Starfield's horrible reception? Bethesda actually sent employees to quote-unquote correct negative reviews of the game on Steam, quite literally telling players they are playing the game wrong, and that the astronauts who had actually walked on the moon in the 60s had fun exploring the emptiness of space, so why don't you? Or Rocksteady Games' complete ignoring of the criticism of their flop game Kill the Justice League, which has led to a recently revealed 41% decline in total revenue for the second quarter of this fiscal year. or Ubisoft insulting their Japanese player base with numerous historical inaccuracies, all the while claiming the opposite, and being forced to apologize to Japan itself for its screw-up after falling under investigation by the Japanese government itself. And let's not forget BioWare. In a recent article featured on Edge concerning Dragon Age: The Veilguard, it was claimed that players wouldn't be able to handle controlling companions because of the pace of combat, and because companions are quote-unquote their own realized individuals. But how many players were asked about this, or even wanted this change? And no, I'm not referring to internal testers. So let's talk about the combat issue in Dragon Age: The Veilguard. Many people, myself included, have voiced concerns about this. It looks very bland, dumbed down, and not particularly appealing, even in an action sense. And this, coupled by the loss of companion control, paints a very ominous picture indeed. And the response to this, usually made by developer acolytes, is typically any number of the following. I only care about romance and companions. The story is the most important thing in Dragon Age, not combat. Or that combat has never mattered in Dragon Age whatsoever anyway, so shut up and stop complaining. Now, to be fair, these are not the developers themselves making these statements. They couldn't afford to make these statements for obvious reasons. But these people are the unswerving devotees of BioWare, and their public statements reflect what the developers think internally about you and me. They wish we would just disappear, and they don't wish that in a nice way. These people really think that other people who care about combat in Dragon Age are stupid, uncultured brutes who clearly don't understand Dragon Age as a franchise. In effect, we are the wrong Dragon Age players in their eyes. But let me offer you a different perspective, one shared, in fact, by many more than these people care to imagine. Combat helps to facilitate and strengthen a story. Challenging combat that requires work, effort, and tactics to overcome a difficult obstacle can make the story rewards that much greater, as you defeat an overwhelming opponent and are rewarded with some new secret that progresses the story. It is, in a sense, a part of the hero's journey, which many games of the RPG fantasy genre actively seek to emulate. Combat is the challenge that is required in order to progress in this hero's journey. After all, why even have combat in an epic RPG if it doesn't matter at all, as many of these people are wont to claim? In such a case, you could just as easily turn Dragon Age into a point-and-click visual novel, keeping everything else others rave about, such as companions, romance, and genitalia, and leaving out the horrible and unnecessary combat. But that doesn't work now, does it? Since combat is integral to the epic journey you're undertaking. And for many people, it's very important for that very reason. And making it fun, engaging, and yes, for many tactical, only enhances the story rewards that come afterwards. Now, I don't expect people that actively look down upon me and those like me to understand this. But I mention all this to illustrate a point. These types of people reflect what developers think about people like us, and many developers are simply out to lunch these days when it comes to their customers. Save for the aforementioned acolytes that seemingly align with them on every issue. They resent the fact that average people even have opinions on their games, and even worse, resent the fact that your decision to spend money on their games matters and can determine their futures. These moronic, uncouth gamers who actually want specific things in the products they buy. How dare they? And on a side note, albeit an important one, the entire response to people's concerns about the combat in DAV smacks of nothing so much as solipsism. I honestly don't care if other people play in God mode or mod out combat completely. It doesn't concern me. But the contempt they have for people who actually think combat is important is mind-boggling. It's as if they haven't realized that other people actually like other things, because everything they do and project into the world results from pure self-extrapolation. I can totally understand why some people are obsessed with romance and copulation. It seems self-evident why that's the case. But then again, I realized decades ago that different people like different things. You know, different folks, different strokes. A life lesson seemingly lost on grown adults who massively struggle with this to the point where their only response to people who do like different things about the same games they play is disgust and contempt, a view all too frequently shared by the developers they lionize and revere. Now, it is true that many developers are like this, but thankfully, not all are. In fact, we're fortunate to live in a time when we do have at least one AAA developer that does it right. And yes, you guessed it, that developer is Larian Studios. Now, part of why Larian is so godly in this regard is the fact that they're independent. Sven Finke, and his wife owned 70% of the shares of Larian, with Tencent owning the remaining 30. Which means with majority shares that Sven ultimately has the say in how things are done. But being independent is only part of the puzzle, because the other part lies in the fact that Larian's attitude towards their customers, embodied by Sven Finke himself, is the primary reason why Larian is pro-customer, not their independence. Sven has stated many times that he wants to make games that are fun and that he himself would like to play. When do you hear that from other developers? And Larian has shown time and again that they are the ultimate pro-customer studio. And in the time I've played Larian's games, and I've played and finished 3, Divinity Original Sin, Divinity Original Sin 2, and Baldur's Gate 3, I've never felt an ounce of contempt or heard an ounce of moaning towards players stemming from Larian. They had a nearly 3-year early access prior to Baldur's Gate 3's release, where active player feedback was listened to and encouraged. And perhaps more important than anything else, referencing what I originally talked about, has been a direct developer-to-player pipeline rather than one influenced or orchestrated by middlemen journalists or so-called influencers. This approach is perhaps best embodied by the famous Panel from Hell, where every few months new content was revealed, including new races, classes, and other features of the game, and always accompanied by Sven in full armor, which is a type of enthusiasm you just can't fake. And more recently, Larian created the Channel from Hell, a direct developer-to-player pipeline whose purpose is to offer thanks to Larian's customers, show updates, and the inner workings of the studio, and to basically just keep Larian's customers in the loop about what they're currently doing. And let's not forget about the bear. Whatever you may think of it, it was a brilliant marketing move. But Larian is not alone in this, as there are AA studios that do similar things. In my video talking about what Owlcat might be up to next, I mentioned the lengthy Russian language interview with the CEO of Owlcat, Oleg Spichevsky, who basically only discussed all the things he wants to add to the games his studio makes in order to improve their games and step up their game so as to offer even greater customer satisfaction. This is how it should be done. This type of intentionality does not simply come from independence, but from the type of studio Larian or Owlcat is. And this mentality is sorely lacking in the upper echelons of AAA gaming these days. We can all acknowledge that video games are art, but at the end of the day, they are also products, and not objects simply to be stared at and appreciated, but rather actively interacted with and played. Which means players who are paying customers will have different preferences in what they want, and developers who are lost in their ivory towers and look down at the very people who enable their livelihood as dim-witted churls are not doing themselves any favors by ignoring the concerns that players have. All that said, I also think that such so-called elites are unreachable in this regard, because unlike Larian, they do have to answer to another master, publishers. And publishers and their shareholders don't care about the artistic aspect of games. They only see the product aspect of them. And this is yet another reason to encourage a healthy, direct developer-to-player pipeline that respects the customer's interests and desires. Publishers ought to greenlight these types of interactions that Larian and others have done in order to enhance the developer-customer relationship, inasmuch as developers even care about this, as this is the future, like it or not. Gamers are paying customers of art that also functions as a product, and ultimately, gamers need to like the art of the products they buy. Developers may only grudgingly acknowledge this, but they also do so at their own peril. And yet despite this, this needn't be an antagonistic relationship. Just look at what Larian has done, or Owlcat, whose fan base, and I count myself among them, is arguably even stronger than that of Larian's. And we see this all the time in the interactions they have with other paying customers. Think of all the decades-long paying customers of mom-and-pop's diners, restaurants, and cafes, and the people that return again and again and again because they like the ambiance and the product being sold there. All of this is possible in the realm of gaming, with a certain shift of mentality, but it needs to be desired, and I don't foresee this happening anytime soon. Not with the snobism and elitism rampant in the industry. At the end of the day, gamers just want good games to play, and they, not the entrenched developer bourgeoisie and their yes-men devotees, determine what a good game is. And that's the power that you wield as an ordinary gamer. As a gamer, you're not any more entitled for wanting a good game than a customer at a restaurant is entitled for not wanting to get food poisoning at the restaurant, and never let them tell you otherwise. As always, thank you for tuning in. And if you like my content, you can leave a like, comment, share, and subscribe. It's much appreciated, as it really helps out the channel. And I'll check you out next time. Take care.